I'd like to call the workshop to order. Welcome to all.
I think we're being, video streamed live today, so just to give you that heads up, if you're up there, you'll be on somebody's computer, so smile in a friendly manner. Thanks to everyone who's been with us through this. The hearings have ranged in length and content, and we appreciate your persistence. We appreciate your commitment. I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Representative Kathy Breinert from Mankato, and myself and Senator Sandy Rummel have been co-chairing this joint committee, which has brought together the House E-12 Education Committee Working Group on School Accountability, and that's a mouthful, and the Senate Education Subcommittee on Expectations and Accountability. And we've been very pleased to be working together with the House and the Senate on this issue because of its importance. I'll begin by inviting the legislators at the table to introduce themselves, starting with Representative Tim Norton.
That is me. Tim Norton from Rochester, Minnesota.
Linda Slocum, Richfield and Central Bloomington.
Sandy Rummel from White Bear Lake and Shoreview and Lionel Lakes and those parts.
I'm Senator Ann Lynch. I represent five school districts, Plainview, Elgin, Millville, Stuartville, Chatfield, Dover, Yoda, and Rochester.
Chuck Weger, I represent Maplewood and St. Paul.
Thank you. So the Joint Committee has come together around last session's amendments to school performance report cards. And many of you may already have the legislation, but I like to recall people to the legislation each time we meet because I think it helps understand what our purpose and direction is. We've been working to give legislative due diligence to the charge of the law to consider and recommend how to structure school performance data and school performance report cards to fully, fairly, and accurately report student achievement and emphasize school excellence. Around that charge, we've held two previous public hearings. The first hearing functioned as broad introduction to the issues surrounding the report card. We began with an invitation to the Department of Education to give an overview of both the current report card and plans for possible revisions. Commissioner Segrin shared with us the membership and goals of the department's report card task force. We also heard from Kathy Wagner, the Information Technology Director for MDE, who took us on a web tour of the current report card. Both the history of the report card and the categories as well as future directions were discussed. Then we invited testimony from those with direct experience with the report card. Was it useful? Did it have unintended consequences? Did they have suggestions for us? We heard from three superintendents, one former superintendent, and the director of a statewide parent organization. We learned a lot. There was broad consensus that removing the five stars was a good starting point. We heard general agreement about the limits of high-stakes testing, the need for a growth measure, the importance of longitudinal data, and multiple measures to evaluate student and school performance. We also heard caution about new measures. Be sure they are research-driven and evidence-based. This is a very rough summary of the rich testimony that was shared with us at that first hearing. We are grateful for those who have shared their experience, expertise, and insight with us. Senator Rummel will now offer a brief overview of our second hearing and introduce the first of today's presenters.
Thank you, Chairwoman Breinert. As we have said before, this joint House and Senate Working Group is engaged in a three-part public dialogue that will have a significant impact on our schools and our students. In the second hearing, we asked, what other indicators of educational excellence should we be considering? The purpose of the conversation was to open up our thinking about how we evaluate our schools. Since parents and business people and community leaders all have high expectations for our children, our question continues to be, should our report card in some way reflect some of those expectations? And as Representative Breinert indicated, some of our hearings were longer than others, and this was one of the long ones. It went on about 4.5 hours, I'm embarrassed to say. but we had a wonderful group of people come before us. We grouped them loosely into three different groups. The first group, the folks who spoke to us about where we start as the beginning. They were the early childhood education and school readiness folks who talked to us about the conditions and the capabilities that contribute to learning. We also heard in that group from the arts and other similar groups. In the second group, we were looking at the end in view. What is the point of K-12 education or E-12 education? Increasingly, the expectation is that our students, all our students, not just some, will not only be ready for, but be able to complete 2 years of post-secondary education. So we are asking, what indicators will tell us if we are on the track to meet that expectation? And finally, the third group was a group that presented multiple perspectives from a variety of the education communities. There was special education, the testing and measurement experts in our midst, parents, teachers, and community leaders who gave us insights into the complexities of our accountability system. And I think as we are all beginning to learn, this is a bigger task than maybe we thought it was going to be. Now, between each of these hearings, we have meetings among ourselves. We deliberate what's going on. And each time, we ask ourselves or think about the goals we set out. We're looking for an accountability system that furthers the goals of education itself and that's useful to the parents and the public for which it is designed. It should be a meaningful document. And finally, that it is practical. Whatever we put on that report card is something we can do practically without a significant amount of new investment or labor on the parts of either the department or our school leaders. And as I said, our last hearing was a little bit long, and we did not hear from everybody. So we're going to kind of have one more person. Think of yourself as in the second hearing still. We're going to hear from Executive Director of the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, Mr. Fred Shorty, and he's brought some friends with him. And in a sense, I've had a preview of his testimony. Much of what he will be saying will be a recap of what we heard a couple of weeks ago. That's why I did not go into any greater detail. And in a way, he will be foreshadowing the next stage or the opening of this third hearing. So, Mr. Shorty, would you introduce your guest?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rummel and Representative Brainerd and members of the Assessment and Accountability Committee. We really appreciate the opportunity to let us kind of transition from the second to the third hearing today. And as Senator Rummel said, my name is Fred Shorty, Executive Director of the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association. Prior to this position, I was elementary school principal for 27 years. I'd like to have my colleagues introduce themselves.
I'm Richard Osterson. I'm president of the Elementary Principals Association. I'm also a principal right now in Lakeville, Minnesota. And Senator Lynch, I was in Dover-Eota School District for 4 years as well before I came to Lakeville. And I'll turn it over to Pat.
Good afternoon. My name is Pat Schmidt. I'm most importantly the principal at Hopkins North Junior High School. This year I'm serving as president of the Secondary School Principals Association. Thank you.
We're going to kind of be working off of this handout. Do you have our handout? It's a one-sheeter, and it's two-sided, and we're going to kind of start at the top with the purpose of what we see the purpose of the report card. And we really feel that the primary purpose should be to educate and inform the public, focusing on achieving excellence for students, excellence for all students. And we feel that there should be some guiding principles in the report card, and they should be articulated with academic excellence, the whole school evaluation, the whole school, using multiple measures, not just one MCA score, but multiple measures of performance. And, of course, we feel the report card should be clear, equitable, and informative for the public.
My turn, I guess. We'll skip down to the bottom section of this page, and the part that I was going to encourage you to look at is taking a look at the required academic standards. and that is the report card should reflect the standards that are listed below. Those are state standards that we have in those curricular areas. And right now, the report card we have right now, it tends to be reflective really of only reading and of math. That's how we really look at that. We believe it's important for us to look at the whole child and the education of the whole child. So I'll leave that for your reading. And at this point, on the next page, I guess I'm jumping ahead. I'm trying to move along quicker than I'm supposed to. But we have the on the other side, it's on data assessment or assessment data. And the section that I wanted to talk about was the first bulleted point, and that's the importance of a growth model for assessment. We know there are children in our schools that are behind. We also know that there are children in our schools that are ahead in a specific grade level. It makes a lot of sense to us that all those children would make growth. We don't see that there would be children that are exceeding others in their grade level, that they would be in a holding pattern. We believe it's important for those children to continue to grow. We also believe that there are children that have had some difficulty for one reason or another, and they are behind some of their peers. But we would hope that there would be a growth model for them that's encompassed in that. So the one of the points on assessment model would be to have a growth model for us. And I'll turn it over to Pat, and she'll talk about multiple measures.
Well, certainly schools of excellence rely heavily on assessment data to drive instruction, whether it's assessment data that's collected in the moment by classroom teachers. But if we were to layer all the means of assessment that schools of excellence are currently using in our state, we would know that we have multiple measures, assessment measures available. We would hope, and it certainly sounds from previous testimony or summary that you presented today, we would hope that whatever assessment process is used and integrated into the report card, that it would weave both summative assessment and formative assessment. Our schools in the state of Minnesota use multiple measures currently, go beyond the MCA. I believe two-thirds, perhaps even 80% of our students are using measures such as MAP, NWEA testing, because we know that, one, it provides immediate information, and number two, the information it provides classroom teachers is specific to student needs and therefore drives the instruction that is planned quarterly, sometimes semi-annually or annually. So I'm heartened when I hear that as a committee you are looking to using measurements that provide formative and summative data. But I would urge the committee to realize that there are other assessment data, specifically AP test data, IB test data, ACT, SAT, multiple measures that are a very integral part of schools, secondary schools, and it's, I would comment there are schools in the state, districts in the state, that are looking at using college measurement as a requirement for all students. So there are trends out there that I hope we attend to. Likewise, we know there are numerous indicators of success that move beyond assessment. For our association, the Secondary School Principals Association, we're working and delving heavily into a document, The Bridge to Higher Learning, in which we are in the process of taking a philosophical stance that every student should graduate from high school and have before them the option of post-secondary education. Whether they choose 4-year, 2-year, they are skilled and prepared to move on. And we are currently delineating a series of indicators that beyond the traditional assessment of an ACT or SAT exam, but what are those indicators? So we welcome and will be eager to share our work as we move forward for indicators of academic excellence in our secondary schools.
I think you'd be pleased that we won't use all of our 15 minutes. So we're on the section on reporting, and that's my part on this is to really emphasize we recognize that there's a cost, and there's always a cost, financial as well as a time cost, anytime that we want to share good information with the families and our state school communities throughout our state. So we recognize that. Bottom line is that at both of our associations, we recognize that that's something that needs to take place. We want that to take place as well. We would hope that, though, would not come at the expense of the instruction. We would hope that if there's a burden to that, that financial burden wouldn't come at the cost of instruction. And so we would hope that there'd be a good way of getting that information out in a good cost-effective way in time and in money. So I'll turn it back over to Fred. Fred will summarize everything.
So basically, in summary, the things that you heard in your second hearing, I don't think you're hearing really anything too new today. There is some things that we're passionate about. But just in summary, we really feel that all academic standards should be reflected on the report cards, not just reading and math. The growth model is really important. Growth within the year, growth across years. A focus on the whole school academic excellence, in addition to just AYP, and the use of blended assessments. So we talk about the blended assessments. We know that it can be done, and there are other states that actually do their formative assessing and their No Child Left Behind summative assessing on the computer in the spring of the year. And I think you're well aware of that model, and I realize that's beyond the scope of the report card, but mm-hmm. we think that that's a very powerful tool that could help educators and parents as well. And then the last point was, we really believe that the report card needs to show some of the special characteristics of schools, such as mobility, such as special education programs, English learner language programs, some of those special characteristics that schools have. They certainly shouldn't be penalized for having a high level special education program. They should be on the report card as well. So those were our main points. We appreciate the opportunity today and would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Might I add, I would hope that the report card would also indicate under that final bullet the potential volatility or the changing populations that occur, and I would use my own school as an example. The ELL, English Language Learning Program, in the sister junior high has been closed, and those students have moved to our school. At the same time, through open enrollment, we have brought in a significant Hmong population into our school. So we have moved from an ELL program last year with less than a half-time instructor to now two instructors and a population of approximately 50 students, all from June to September. And that volatile or ever-changing population, I think, is an important part of a report card and very difficult to convey to your public in an understandable format. So that community-friendly report card, I think, is vital. It's a very complex work we do. And when you have so much growth, change, in such a short window of time, I don't envy you the task that you have ahead of you. I'm glad it's yours. But I would be more than glad to assist you in any way.
I'm going to say Pat because I've known Pat Schmidt for quite a few years, so it's hard for me to say Dr. Schmidt or whatever I should be saying. But I think you're crystallizing exactly our challenge, and well, I think we have a lot of humility about what we will be able to accomplish in the time frame we're working in, but we also want to have a comprehensive vision, even though we may only tackle some much narrower parameters than those you put on the table. All the issues that you have raised are actually raised in the legislation itself that directed the advisory committee, challenge the current format of the report card in a constructive manner. And I know the department is engaged in this discussion as we speak, too, so we hope our discussions are complementary and mutually supportive. But I think we have to be thoughtful as a state about the role of the state report card and how comprehensive it should be, whether all of the things you're asking for should necessarily be in the state report card or whether they might be part of a district component. it would give more flexibility to the district vision and some of the local elements there and not force them into a unified format. So I challenge you as organizations to think about that as you're watching and participating, giving us feedback. Think about whether all those things should necessarily be on the state report card or whether the state report card should be constructed in such a way that it might complement what you would give locally to your own, you know, constituents so that you can shape your vision too. So that's just a question I have for you, not necessarily to answer here, but you see what the direction I'm going with that. You can comment certainly if you'd like this.
At our last meeting, where leaders throughout the state, principals throughout the state, were talking to the Bridge to Higher Learning. And just as you mentioned, we came up with so many various indicators of a powerful high school or secondary school program and then engaged ourselves in the very conversation. Statewide, what would those indicators crystallize down to that would be true to virtually every high school, junior high, 7-12 institution in the state? And we really grappled with just that. So we too are in that very same process. And you're right. What do we use to drive excellence in secondary education?
And I would just indicate that in my school, we do have a number of families that are moving in, and our school district is a growing school district. And when I give a tour to families, they'll tell me they found information on our school in either on our website or on the state report card. And they'll use that information often to determine where they're going to buy their home or they're going to build their home. So I do believe that it's an important vehicle for families to be able to find out what does your school offer. And as you had mentioned, possibly is maybe in one school, even within the district, maybe they offer something that's a little bit different than another school. Is that what I heard you ask for?
Well, another piece of the discussion we've been having is, inputs versus outputs, and I know you're very familiar with that issue. If it's a performance report card, performance measures should speak for themselves. It's not that you shouldn't have the opportunity to draw a profile of your school, but what are we trying to do when we create a document that's intended to evaluate the performance of our students and our schools? And should we be cautious about mixing inputs and outputs, or how we frame that when we're putting it on a report card? Because what's accessible to parents? Are they going to decide that you're a good school because of the money that you receive, your per pupil? They don't know how to evaluate one piece of data against another unless we give them a context for that evaluation. But those are some of the issues we're struggling with. Thank you very much. Are there other questions? Yes, I'm sorry. Did you want to comment?
Well, we appreciate the thoughtful deliberation going beyond one single symbol giving a school rating, and we know how complex it is, and we stand here to help in any way working with the department or with the legislature. We would be happy to do that.
Representative Norton, did you have a...
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I would just invite your continued feedback. I'm sorry. Senator Rummel?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
And my comment is about the meetings on the Bridges to Higher Learning. And maybe it's implied in what Representative Brainerd just said, that I do hope you keep us informed about, as I see it, you are the folks on the ground. You know, it's just how do we marry the theory of assessment and the practice? Just the down-to-earth,
exactly.
How do you get it done? And we're not there. You are. And so we hope that you will keep us informed. Don't wait for us to call you.
We will. We will. Thank you. From paper to practice is so important, and we're grappling with it. So I will keep you well informed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, now we move to the second portion of our meeting, which is really the primary goal of our third public hearing. And that's to really get an overview of where we've been and where we might go from here. And I'll just comment to begin with that both prior to and between our previous sessions, and Senator Rummel's mentioned this to some extent, we have sought professional input from many sources. And we're grateful for all of that input. The The University of Minnesota, through their College of Education and Human Development, has been particularly helpful to us in this process. It is their testimony today that will guide us as we move towards summarizing recommendations and shaping a vision. I would like to introduce Dr. David Johnson, Associate Dean of Research and Policy. In addition to his role as professor in the Department of Educational Policy and Administration, he currently directs the Institute on Community Integration, a federally designated university-affiliated program that focuses on developmental disabilities. He's with us today to speak briefly about the college's role in helping us consider changes to the Minnesota School Report Card, as well as introduce our next speaker. Welcome, Dr. Johnson.
Thank you very much. Representative Reinhart and Senator Rummel and members of the committee, thank you. My name is David Johnson, and you've indicated my role at the University of Minnesota. I wear a variety of hats. I come to you today as the Associate Dean for Research and Policy with my colleague, Professor Mark Davison, to talk a little bit about where we have come thus far in our discussions with you and with kind of a distillation of the various proceedings that have gone on here, the various testimonies over the last two sessions. I also wanted to first just extend to you greetings from our new dean, Darlene Bailey. She's not so new, I guess, anymore. If you've been there a year, you certainly have honeymoon's over, as they say. She has, as you are aware, very active interest in this issue and has had the opportunity to meet several times with us as colleagues at the university as well as with members of this committee over time as well. So we take a very direct interest in this. All of what we have heard is what you've mentioned already, and certainly the previous testimony has alluded to it. There is a framework emerging here for things to think about. Those things focus on all students. They focus on issues of multiple measures. They focus on issues of growth. And they focus on issues of depth, breadth, and the richness of what we have in Minnesota in terms of public education and how it's reflected in terms of student performance. So I'm going to be very brief in this. We have had the opportunity, as I say, to work with Professor Davison, Professor Davenport, who is also here this afternoon, and Professor Rodriguez, who are all measurement specialists at the University of Minnesota. And believe me, I am glad they are here to work through this testimony. Very good. Mark?
Thank you, Representative Breyer.
Welcome, Dr. Davison.
To begin with, I'd like to call your attention to the background on my PowerPoint. Microsoft calls this the ocean. But those of us in Minnesota know that it's really Lake Malat. I've titled my comments today Accountability Discussion Starters because I simply don't think this will be the last word on the issue. In fact, I'm sure it will not. And so my basic goal was to try and prepare some comments, that would kind of help us focus the discussion and that would put a few concrete suggestions on the table in order to try and crystallize the thinking about these various issues. And I've tried to pull together comments from a variety of sources, especially the speakers at some of the prior hearings, so that to the extent that I'm able to make any contribution at all today, much of the credit actually goes to other people, particularly people who were at those hearings and who spoke there. Let me start with the basic idea, purposes of accountability. We need to remember that accountability is never an end in itself. It's a means to an end. It's a tool. And it's a tool for to try and foster the broad goals of education. And so any discussion of accountability has to begin with the statement of what those broad goals are. And in this second slide, what I've tried to do is suggest a list of six goals that the accountability system, including the report card, should be designed to foster, some of which have been mentioned already today. The first of which is excellence in achievement. We want all of our students to attain high levels of achievement, and we want them to be competitive with students from the major countries around the world. And by that I mean the major industrialized countries. Secondly, we want to foster equity. That is, we want the benefits of education to be equitably distributed across students from various different backgrounds. And by that I mean males and females, students from the five major ethnic groups, students from families of low and high income, and so forth and so on. Thirdly, we are a democracy, and people need to participate actively in a democracy, and we need to prepare them for that citizenship. Fourthly, we need to prepare them for what comes after high school, higher education, and the world of work. And we need a balance in the system. As one of the previous speakers tried to say, we're not just teaching reading and math. In fact, we're not just teaching the core academic areas of language arts, science, social studies, and math. We're going beyond that to the arts, vocational education, physical education, and so forth. And so that to the extent possible, the accountability system should reflect that kind of a breadth. Now let's turn to the report card itself. There are certain elements of the current report card that we would almost certainly want to retain. Many of them because they are required either by federal statute, No Child Left Behind legislation primarily, or Minnesota statute. And I've tried to list some of them here. First of all, we're required to list achievement data, proficiency in achievement, disaggregated by student group. No Child Left Behind requires that. We're required to report participation in testing, the percentage of students who are tested in the statewide testing, and we're required to report it by student group under No Child Left Behind. We want to continue to report school demographics, such as the proportion of students who are eligible for free and reduced lunch, the proportion of students for whom English is a second language, proportion of kids in special education, and so forth and so on. Attendance at the high school, graduation rates. We're required to report some information on school safety, such as frequency of suspensions and expulsions. And, of course, the highly qualified teacher provisions of No Child Left Behind require that we report data on teacher qualifications. In my last bullet, what I would note is that we want to make sure that the data are comparable across schools. We have a system of school choice in Minnesota. And in order for parents and students to make informed choices, they need data that is comparable across schools. They need to compare schools in making those choices, and they need data that is comparable across the schools. And so long as we have a system of school choice, I think we should make sure that the information on the report card is comparable and will inform those choices. But I also think there are some ways that we can improve the school report card. And on this slide, I've tried to list some of the directions that we should take in that attempt. As one of the speakers mentioned today, in my opinion, we should be working on revising the accountability system to put more of an emphasis on excellence, not failure. One of the things that I dislike about the federal No Child Left Behind legislation is that the centerpiece of it is the identification of schools that are failing to make adequate yearly progress. And that puts the emphasis on failure. I think our goal should be to identify excellent schools. And the reason is that what we want our schools to do is to strive for excellence, not merely strive to avoid failure. And therefore, I think we need to reorient the system to make it put more emphasis on the identification of excellent schools, not merely ones that are failing to make adequate yearly progress. Next, I think we need to select appropriate multiple measures. And here, let me start out by saying what I don't mean. I don't mean more testing. That is, you'll notice in the comments throughout that there's not a single suggestion for a single additional test. Nor do I mean that we need more measures of things that we are measuring already. What I really mean is that we need to expand the measures so we can get greater breadth in the types of things that are reflected on the report card. And I think we need to update the report card in response both to changes in education, such as the high school reform effort, and changes in the testing system, such as the growth scale that we now have on the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment version 2. We need to complement, not duplicate, the information in the federal AYP system. On the state page of the web school report card, I think we should also incorporate a national comparison, basically NAEP data, which would indicate how students in Minnesota generally compare to those from other states. And in my opinion, actually, we need to explore a new system to designate major levels of school performance, particularly one that will identify excellent schools and that will help shift the emphasis away from failure onto excellence. Now, where are you in this process? Well, at this point, I think you've heard a great number of suggestions. One might even say an overwhelming number of suggestions. And so the idea is to try and narrow things down, get a little better focus. And here I've tried to suggest, I think, a number of criteria that you could use to evaluate suggestions and narrow down the areas that are being explored and considered. First of all, in evaluating the suggestions, I would suggest you consider the degree to which that suggestion fosters broad goals of education, such as those that I had on the second slide. Secondly, evaluate them in terms of technical quality, things like reliability, validity, transparency. Third, the degree to which it serves intended audiences. And that, of course, means you need to define the audience for the report card. And what I'm suggesting here is that the primary audience be parents and the general public, and of course I would include policymakers, people in front of the room, in the general public category. This means, of course, that it will not fully meet the needs of some people, particularly school administrators and school teachers. They need far more information than does the general public or the school administrators and so forth. So there need to be information systems available that will meet the additional needs of other audiences. But I'm suggesting here that the appropriate role for the report card, or the appropriate audience for the report card, consists of parents and the public, and you restrict the information on the report card to information which will be useful to those two audiences primarily. Thirdly, I would suggest restricting it to information which is useful about schools and districts. There were some suggestions that I heard in the previous sessions, which I thought were basically saying that information about individual students is what's most useful to parents. That's definitely true, but information like that does not have a place on a public website such as the school report card. What belongs here is information about schools and districts, and it should be limited to that. Next, of course, you need to consider the degree to which the information is research-based or evidence-based to the extent that it can be. This doesn't mean that every question can be decided by whether or not the information is research-based. Some things are simply questions of values. For instance, those education goals that I had on the first slide are really a statement about possible, about things that we, outcomes that we value. And so some questions, as I say, will be decided simply by issues of values. Others are decided by law. They're required by federal statute or state statute. But to the extent possible, we should make these indicators consistent with what we know from the research evidence in education. And last but not least, we need to consider feasibility and cost. And we should use feasibility in two ways. First of all, it will tend to rule out some suggestions. There are some things that are just not reasonable, possible, or too costly. But also, feasibility will in some cases suggest a timeline. In other words, there may be some things that we cannot develop to a form where it can be reported relatively soon, but we could, given a little more time, bring it to the point where it was usable information that we could include on the report card. So feasibility will rule out some alternatives and suggest a timeline for others. Secondly, many of the suggestions that you heard in the previous hearings were rather general. In other words, the people did not go into great detail with regard to their suggestions. And given the time available for them, of course, you couldn't expect much else. That was the only reasonable thing to do. But it does mean that at this point, you need a process for refining those suggestions. And what I've suggested here is that basically you select a small number of areas in which attention will be focused in order to refine indicators in those particular areas. And in the last bullet here, I've suggested five areas. One is the growth and value added area that the previous speakers talked about. A second is a set of course-taking indicators, particularly for the high school level, that would reflect high levels of attainment at the high school level, and it would give us a way to broaden out the areas that are reflected in the report card. The third is what you might call school climate, school safety, students' feelings of engagement. The next is the area of teachers and staff. And the last one is really not an indicator area, but it's a general review of report card information and usability. These are probably not, as I say, the last word on the areas that you want to pursue, but these are my suggestions. I think they're areas in which we could make improvements. And I'm going to devote my remaining comments to a consideration of each of these areas, what the issues are, and in some cases, some concrete ideas as to how you might pursue it. Let's begin with the growth and value added area, and might as well get myself in controversy right away here. First of all, in evaluating assessment, let me make sure we're clear on the distinction here. There are two kinds of indicators, one that represents what is called proficiency, and the other that represents growth. Now, a proficiency indicator is based on a single test at a single time point. And usually it's at least in the state on the report card, it's an indication of whether students have mastered the grade level standards as reflected by the end of year assessment. For instance, it's the proportion that, well, they use a proficiency index, but for our purposes, we can think of it as the proportion of kids who have scored at a level which would suggest that they are proficient with grade level standards. The second area is growth. Growth requires two testings. In other words, you can't evaluate growth based on a single test score. You have to test kids at least two different times and to look at how much they improve from the first to the second testing. There already is language in the legislation which requires growth-based measures, although we don't now have them on the report card. And I think any number of speakers here have recommended this approach. In deciding how to proceed in this area, though, one of the first things you have to do is decide on what testing system you are going to use to measure achievement. And while there are many possibilities, I think in reality there are two major options in front of us. One of them, of course, is the current Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, for which a group growth scale has either recently been developed or will be soon available. The second option is some form of a computerized adaptive test similar to what Dr. Sorty talked about in his previous comments. The one that is the version of this that's most available to people is, or most familiar to people in Minnesota, in the schools at least, is the Northwest Education Association's achievement level test. And in an ideal world, frankly, this is the approach that I would favor, some sort of a computerized adaptive test. As was mentioned earlier, computerized tests give you an almost immediate turnaround. In fact, the NWEA results can be available to a student the very next day. They can usually be available to a teacher within a week. And in fact, it's possible to give them people scores right away as soon as they finish the test. And the faster you turn the information around, the more useful it is. The other great thing about these tests is it actually provides measures of achievement which are more reliable than a standard paper pencil test, particularly for students at the extremes, students who are well above average or well below average. However, computerized testing brings two feasibility concerns into play. And while there are really more than two, there are two major ones that I think the decision hinges upon. The first one is the capacity of the school. That is, how much testing equipment do they have available? Because under the federal No Child Left Behind law, they have to test all of their kids in at least two subjects, and they have to do it in a fairly short time window. You know, they don't have all year to do it. And in my conversations around the state, some schools are very confident that they can do this. Other schools are very nervous about their ability to do it. And of course, part of the reason they're nervous is because under No Child Left Behind, you have to test almost all of your kids, and if you don't test all of your kids and almost all of your kids and almost all of your kids in the student subgroup, why, you'll be considered as having failed to make adequate yearly progress. So if, because of some technical glitch, they can't test the required number of students, they will be in some hot water relative to No Child Left Behind. So some of them are rather concerned about their capacity. The second major issue is constructed response items. Essay items, basically. You know, our statewide tests include some open-ended items, usually 3 to 5 questions per test. And these are pose some complications on a computer. First of all, they slow the turnaround time because they cannot be scored instantaneously by the machine. They have to be sent to a facility somewhere where they're scored by human scorers and then returned. So until those come back, you can't give students their final scores. And so when you include constructed response items, as we do on the NCAAs, you don't get instant turnaround of final scores to students. Secondly, students have to type in their answers. They have to use a keyboard. And this requires not just that they're able to keyboard, but they're so facile at keyboarding that they can compose on the keyboard. In other words, they don't have to think about what they're typing. They can just they can spend the time thinking about their answers. This is particularly, and it's particularly difficult for some very young students who have very small hands, like third graders, and who have some difficulty with standard-sized keyboards. So, given these concerns, at the moment, I personally tend to lean towards use of the growth-based measures, although I could readily be convinced otherwise. And the two things that would turn me around, first of all, would be signals from the school that they felt comfortable about their capacity to do this. And the second thing would be a decision that maybe we would not continue to include constructive response items on the statewide test. A number of people have point out that a number of people have told you, that, in fact, one of the previous speakers mentioned something like 75% of the students in Minnesota are being tested with the Northwest Education Assessment. But that test has only multiple choice items. It has no constructive response items in its current embodiment. Next, in my next to the last bullet here, what I'm alluding to is the fact that the U.S. Department of Education is becoming more open to the idea of using growth scores in the adequate yearly progress process. But being the micromanagers that they are, they've also issued a set of regulations on what you have to do in order to incorporate these growth scores. And my suggestion is that as we think through exactly how we want to do this, we take a look at those regulations, try and develop our system in line with what they're suggesting, so that to the extent possible, we could begin to work these growth measures into the AYP determination each year. But as I've indicated in the last bullet, we need to remember that we almost certainly will need to continue to report both growth and proficiency indicators by student groups. The next slide talks about a wholly new area that's not reflected on the report card at all, and it refers primarily to for high school. And here I'm talking about successful completion of rigorous coursework. Not just whether the school offers rigorous coursework, but whether the students and how many of the students are actually successfully completing it. And if you go down this route, the first thing you have to do is define rigorous. That's one of the difficult nuts to crack. And what I'm suggesting here is that a definition of rigorous, meaning rigorous as recognized by some external body, either higher education or industry. And to give you an idea of what kinds of things I mean, let me start out talking about some vocational coursework preparation indicators that we might adopt. Some vocational courses that students take can be transferred to a higher education institute and count for credit at that institute. Okay. We could adopt indicators such as the number of credits or the number of credits per student that are earned of this type. There are other high school credits that count towards industry-recognized certification. And in fact, in the previous hearing, we heard some people talk about that a program in which that's done. We could also incorporate this into the accountability system, where it would be something like the number of credits earned per student that counts towards industry-recognized certification. A second area where we could do something has to do with completion of preparation standards for four-year higher education. We have two public systems of higher education. One is the MINSU system, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The other is the U of M system. Both of them have what they call coursework preparation standards. And while they're two separate systems, they're also very similar in that they require coursework in math, science, social sciences, language arts, foreign language, and the arts. And in most cases, they require much the same amount and much the same coursework. There are some differences. But I think there's enough similarity that we could develop an indicator which would represent the percentage of graduates of the high school who had satisfied public higher education preparation standards. Notice I've made no reference to private higher education institutions. And this is because I have not encountered a comparable statement by the private colleges in the state, at least not one that stated in terms of coursework completion or something that could be fairly feasibly turned into an indicator for the report card. I do, however, think that if they were to make such a statement, actually the coursework would end up looking fairly similar to what the two sets of public universities have. And I also think this coursework prepares people pretty well for higher education outside the state. So those standards represent, I think, a pretty good basis for development of an indicator. In the second bullet here, I've talked about also some other coursework completion that we could look at: advanced placement, international baccalaureate, post-secondary education, college in the school, and so forth. I've also indicated ARC at the bottom. I really don't have some good suggestions, real good suggestions in that area, but I think it's an area where we, in fact, could develop some indicators, either around coursework completion or other kinds of student attainments, such as attainments in music contests and things that we have going on. Before I leave the ARC, however, I would note that they are reflected in the four-year public higher education coursework standards. Climate, safety, and engagement. School climate, school safety, and public and student engagement. My first bullet here actually does not, it reflects a number of suggestions at the last hearing, but it does not relate directly to the school report card. Rather, it refers to the Minnesota Student Survey. In this area, a number of the suggestions that were made at the prior meeting involved the use of surveys, either use surveying students, or in one case, it seemed to be surveying both students and teachers. We already have a student survey called the Minnesota Student Survey, which we administer to students once every 3 years. And I think it does contain some questions on the extent to which they feel safe in their school, the extent to which they feel engaged in school activities and connected to the faculty and other students and so forth. So I think it would be wise to review the content of that survey and to make sure that it does adequately cover the areas that were suggested by the previous speakers. These areas are, in fact, related to other outcomes, both inside school and outside. The second bullet does, in fact, relate to the survey, or to the report card. It's possible that we might want to consider identifying a very, very small number of questions in this area, you know, 5, 6, something like that. Questions that are, which research suggests, are related to things like dropping out and other behaviors, important behaviors, both inside and outside of school. Administering them along with the statewide test would be a very short time. And then reporting the results of the survey to the on the report card. I would note that there are many testing programs like the ACT testing program which include a short survey of some kind at the beginning or before students begin the test, but this is an option. I'm not prepared to specifically recommend it at this point, nor to suggest a specific set of questions, but I think it's an option to be considered. The one reservation I would note about it is that there is some language in Minnesota statutes, in fact it's one of the things that was handed out today, which says that the report card, it refers to the objectivity of information on the report card. This, any kind of survey data, obviously is subjective. It's the opinion of the people filling it out. And this may, any survey data like this may run contrary to the intent of that legislation. Finally, there are objective indicators of school climate and capacity, things like funding per pupil, technology capacity, space, and so forth. Teacher staff data, which is the fourth area that I've listed above. There are a number of indicators to suggest here. One is average teacher experience. And in fact, a particular indicator that I've recommended is percent of teachers with 5 or more years of experience. I'm not a real expert in the area of qualified teachers, but my colleagues at the university and elsewhere tell me that the data suggests kind of a curvilinear relationship between experience and teacher quality, that with over the first 5 years of experience, teacher performance tends to improve, and then it kind of levels out at that point. Additional years don't make that much difference, and so that it would make some sense to adopt an indicator which would be the percent of teachers with 5 or more years of experience. The next two bullets are basically things that are probably that are required by the highly qualified teacher sections of No Child Left Behind. Percent of teachers with licensure in the area of instruction. Percent with a BA, with an MA. You probably also want to include either student-teacher ratios or class size data of some kind. Personally, I think class size is a more meaningful indicator at the elementary level where they have self-contained classrooms than it is at the secondary level. And so, personally, would sort of lean towards some kind of a student-teacher ratio in the junior high years and higher, but class size at the elementary level. Another possible indicator, which I would recommend, is teacher turnover ratio. Troubled schools tend to be characterized by a high teacher turnover ratio, and therefore this is an indicator that it pays to keep an eye on. Finally, one of the speakers suggested that we take a look at suggested the student counselor ratio. I've seen some survey data which suggests that we have the highest ratio of students to counselors of any state in the nation. Very few counselors relative to the number of students, and therefore we probably ought to keep an eye on this indicator. Finally, a review of the report card format and information. Basically, we need a careful definition of the target audience, and we need to make sure the information is useful, appealing, and user-friendly for that audience. So, in closing, let me make basically two or three comments. First of all, again, we need to keep in mind the basic goal of accountability. It's not an end in itself. It's designed to foster the broad goals of education, whatever that they might be. It's designed to drive us towards excellence and monitor our progress in the areas where we are trying to achieve excellence. And they would be broad goals like high achievement, equity, preparation for higher education, work and citizenship, balance and breadth, and so forth. Secondly, at this point, what I'm suggesting is that the process be narrowed. That is, there be an identification of a few areas for further work in which we would develop new indicators that could be refinements of or that could be added to those indicators that are already on the report card. And of course, I have suggested four areas here for further work. Growth and value added, coursework indicators, climate, safety, and engagement, and teacher staff information. And that if we put our focus there, we can, I think, improve the school report card in a number of ways, in ways that will increase the emphasis on excellence, that will increase the balance of areas reflected in the report card, and that will bring it more up to date with changes in the recent changes both in education and in the statewide testing system. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Davison. That was a very comprehensive review of the many places we've been. I would really like to open this discussion to members of this joint committee and see if you have either clarifications or concerns you'd like to raise about the recommendations. While you're thinking about that, Dr. Davison, I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
The first relates to the area of climate safety and engagement.
Okay.
You raised the issue that surveys are inherently subjective. With no psychometric expertise, I'd like to challenge that, because I've worked for many years with the Minnesota Student Survey and professionals who have used that survey, and they would argue that it has some level of reliability and validity because of the way the questions are designed and constructed and used over time, the way that the data is gathered and compared. And so I guess I'm asking you if that position you make about subjectivity can be challenged in terms of the design and use of a survey-type instrument.
I mean, their point is well taken. That survey data is reliable. It's gathered in a comparable way from year to year so that we can compare trends. And there is some validity in it. Most certainly, because it's connected to various outcomes like dropping out and so forth. And so it's very strong on those qualities. But it is the opinion of the people filling the questionnaire out, and in that sense, subjective. But to say that it's subjective doesn't necessarily mean it's not useful or valid and reliable, because it is.
Are not research-based.
Oh, it's research-based.
Okay. That's, all right. I just wanted to clarify that. Are there other questions? Yes, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Davison, I sense that you use the terms growth and value added interchangeably or as one. And I'm a little confused. And I wonder if you could just offer some clarification there. And the statute specifically talks about value added and very specifically deletes the word growth. And so maybe you can help make that a little bit more clear.
Obviously, I'm recommending the growth. Well, first of all, some people will count growth as being growth measures, they will include them in their definition of value added. Unfortunately, there are now a great number of definitions of value added. But as I've listened to people talk, I think what they are talking about is growth, because and including the previous speakers, because what they're talking about is looking at what's accomplished by the students in a given year, meaning their improvement from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And it's what's going on in the school in terms of improvement over time that is the real measure of how effective a school is. And this is quite consistent with any number of definitions of value added, although there are also some that would be inconsistent with that. But what I'm really recommending is that we look at the improvement, longitudinal improvement over time, and include indicators based on that. Whether you choose to call them growth or value added is not key to what I'm suggesting here.
Does that answer your question, Senator Lynch? Or you want to think about that a minute? I'll stop. Okay. I think you want to follow up.
Madam Chair, I just think that there's been a lot of discussion over the terminology, and clearly the statute was changed for one reason or another, and I think that if we are to move forward in this area, that it's important that everyone sitting at the table have kind of the same definition or be kind of on the same playing field in terms of what we're really talking about. And it seemed to me that Dr. Davison is using the terms interchangeably. I'm okay with that, but I just think that that's certainly not always, has not always been the case. And so, just something to think about.
Senator Rummel, did you have a clarification in that area? Or
not
did you want
in that area.
Okay.
It's been a switch topic.
Okay, well, I'll come back to you. But what I'm hearing you say, Dr. Davison, is there's not necessarily professional agreement about a clear difference between these definitions, although there are some people in this research area that would want to make a clear clear definitional difference.
Between them, yes.
Okay. You know, Senator Lynch, I appreciate you raising the concern, and I think we'll follow it closely, but I think if we form the working groups that Dr. Davison is recommending, that probably would be one of the tasks we ask of them, is to look at our statute and address that clarification of definition as part of their recommendation. Does that satisfy you in moving forward? Okay. And Senator Rummel, go ahead and change the subject.
Well, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge both Dr. Davison, Dr. Johnson, and the other members of the university who were very instrumental in helping us think out loud together. We had 4 or 5 extensive meetings with these very learned folks who helped us sort through very complex data, and I think it should be acknowledged and that we appreciate the time that you've given us. On the coursework stuff, I'm thinking about our report cards. We have both high school and grade school, and of course we don't track rigorous coursework in the grade school. Would you be suggesting that we do something such as Dr. Sorty and the others, Mr. Sorty, suggested, somehow acknowledging the other courses we teach, or is coursework only relevant to the secondary part of the educational plan?
First of all, given the record-keeping systems in the school, I don't think there is commonly kept the kind of data comparable to that of the high school, so that you could develop coursework indicators at the elementary level, similar to those that you have at the high school. But there are things that you can do at the elementary level that would be more a description of what the schools offer in various areas, like music or the arts, or in other words, what opportunities they offer. But they, I think, would be, as I say, more what opportunities the school offers rather than what attainments the students have made in those areas. Because from my understanding of the record keeping systems in the elementary schools, they would not have what I would call attainment information on individuals. Students in the same way that the high school students.
Thank you. Here's a follow-up. Yes. Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up. In the elementary, I think that it would be important to note that the school, whether the schools offer things like foreign language, are they IB schools in the elementary? There are a number of different programs and focus groups, or I should say focus areas for elementary schools that I think the public is interested in when they're looking at an elementary school. And I think particularly lately the foreign language issue. And so some of those things might be important to note on any kind of, not the student achievement or attainment issues, but just what kind of coursework is offered.
And there, I think there are a number of states which in their report card they have, I don't know what I would call it, it's sort of an optional page where schools can put information that they select, and some of them will use it to talk about the opportunities that they offer in the area of the arts or foreign language or what have you. And while I didn't mention anything like that in my comments, it would be a good addition to a report card.
Thank you, Dr. Davison. And I think we have in previous sessions heard testimony to that effect, that we might have some type of optional information on a profile. I think that discussion is worth continuing. I don't think it gets to the heart of the matter of what measures are appropriate in terms of a performance description, but nevertheless, I know schools, that it was what we were hearing from the principals earlier about wanting a more broad and comprehensive view of what they believe their school is and does. Representative Norton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was pleased to hear you mention including NAEP scores. One of the issues, I spoke this morning with our director in our school district of curriculum and accountability, assessment and accountability, and we had this discussion, and I find, and he has found, that parents, the ones that do go on the site and try to use it in or get their letter in the mail and try to use the score about their child to make some determination about their school, are doing so inappropriately. And by having the NAEP scores, it puts it in a perspective because there is no comparison from state to state with a criterion reference test the way we do it in this country. And that gives at least a uniform kind of point of reference for people. And if I could also ask, there was some mention prior to your testimony, and then I think you might have touched on it too, about other testing. Do you believe there's a way with the variety of tests used? Because I think what I heard, and I'm not meaning to disagree with you, I'm looking for clarification, and maybe some of my colleagues have it too, that 75% of other districts use other tests, not necessarily all the Northwest NWEA. And so if they do other tests, is there a way to use the variety of tests that are used statewide on the website to still provide useful information? So I guess that's a question I would ask. Do you think we can do that?
There is not a real good way to take results from different tests and provide information that's comparable across different schools which use different tests. And so that's a real challenge. There are also some things like the ACC test information, which probably for the high schools at least, you have some students from each high school taking it. But it's a different proportion of students from the various high schools, and that makes the information not completely comparable across the different schools.
Can I follow up?
Yes, Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. And I guess because the MCA2s are criterion referenced in many or most of the other tests that we've talked about are norm referenced, does not that norm reference put it in a different way to compare yourself nationally, even if you can't compare it from school to school? So it would still give a perspective for a parent, but maybe not exactly the same perspective of school to school. It would tell you where this school stands nationally. And would that be helpful?
There are some small, well, maybe it's not a people debate how small, differences in the way that the different tests collect norm data. And also sometimes the timing with which they collect the norm data. For instance, if there's a period where achievement is rising and one school or one test collects the data at the beginning of that period and one collects it at the end, that causes the norms to be somewhat uncomparable. So that the comparability of norms across the different tests is a bit loose. And it makes people nervous about comparing data from different tests based on normative information.
If you're done, Representative Norton, I'd like to follow up on that, this very same line of thinking, but with a little bit different question, Dr. Davidson. What would you consider about the possibility of having both the MCA2 growth score, you know, and the computerized adaptive test, which in this case the NWEA, because such a large number of our districts are using it, to have the option of having that data in a parallel fashion on a report card with different information coming from the NWEA. So many districts are using it now in terms of moving students forward on a daily basis in the classroom. And I don't have the expertise to say what the measures are, whether they're the RIT scores or what, but could we do both and have a valuable tool for assessing student achievement?
The other complication that comes in there is that
they don't all give it at the same time during the year. So if you did something like that, you would have to have information on the score indicating what the time of the year the data was collected, and discouraging people from comparing results that were collected at different times during the year.
And that's a very good point. I appreciate that, because if we were going to use it, if it were going to become a statewide indicator, we would have to require it in a certain window. So, and that may, it may lose the flexible use that it has within the district in terms of the actual classroom application. I'd like to hear more discussion about that, but maybe that would be a question we could refer to our study group in that, in this area. Yes, Senator Rummel.
Pick up on the comparability question. You said earlier that because we're a school system that has choice, we need to have this comparability factor. And this morning I was listening to the hearing on student achievement, and last week we heard an extensive hearing on the results of the levies. And the long and short of it is that I wonder if there's any comparability, that there is such a wide diversity in resources and in demographics and in even cultural mixes across the state, how any designator could account for the wide variability that we have in our various schools.
I think you're referring to the bullet that talks about having designations of levels of...
To me, a designation of levels is only works is if everybody's got the same playing field.
Yeah. And you can't make the data completely, or you can't make the comparison completely comparable. But if you do limit, sort of base the comparisons primarily on schools that where the students are starting at a similar point at the beginning of the year, I think you can go a long way towards making them comparable. And as we've discussed, I'm a bit of a fan of having some of these designators. And what bothers me is that I think it goes back to this question of trying to put more of an emphasis on excellence. You know, we have to realize that there is a set of major school designations in place now. It's the AYP system. And so we have a system that of classifying schools in terms of whether or not they're failing with respect to the AYP system. And I am personally somewhat skeptical that we can get the emphasis off failure, off the AYP designations, unless we have sort of a competing system of designations that identifies excellence in a comparable way. But that's just my opinion.
Senator Rummel.
So how would you get at the comparability? I remember earlier this year there was a report by the Citizens League where they went district by district in terms of their property taxes and their school referenda, and then they categorized districts in clumps that supposedly comparable. And so you could look in that clump, how did you fare? But they didn't do it across the state. Would you envision something such as that?
Yes, and if it were done, I think the major thing to look at is not so much the funds available to the school, but the affluence of the parents. That seems to be the money indicator that's most closely related to achievement. Or I would use the beginning achievement level, or the achievement level at the end of the previous year, and compare schools where the kids were starting at about the same point. It would be, I think, those are the indicators that most go the farthest towards narrowing the playing field, or leveling the playing field, at least if you're talking about comparisons of schools in terms of achievements or coursework attainment.
I was probably thinking of a more complex thing that would
you know, size of district and some other indicators such as the economic status of the district and the cultural mix, some kind of thing that is kind of like we do with sports. We've got, you know, AAA and AA and single A sports, you know, just something comparable to that.
Well, there's a whole bunch of things that you can equate on, but I think you have to pick a small number, and those things that are most closely related to achievements and coursework attainment and things like that. And the major ones, I think, the two most important ones that I recommend are income factors, but it would be the affluence of the family, which seems to be more closely related to achievement than is per pupil funding in the school, and the point at which students are starting or maybe ending the previous year in terms of reading level or math level or something, which gets taken into account in a growth indicator.
But in a small rural school, in availability of AP courses and IB courses would be far more limited than it would be, for example, in my district. So that's why I would say district size also is a factor.
Yeah. Yeah, and on some of those kinds of indicators, school size becomes, like the AP, completion of AP coursework, yes, school size does become a more important factor to take into account.
I'd like to take this line of questioning maybe in just a little bit different direction, but I'd like to continue to ask you about your position on designations. And I'm very open to what you've said in the past on this, Dr. Davis, about the potential that has to shift the focus to excellence. My concern is that any movement toward a new system of designation be very carefully vetted, because our experience up to now has not been as constructive as we would like it to have been. So my first thought is, in the areas that you're recommending we continue to pursue, if it might be appropriate to ask the study groups if there is an appropriate designation within just their frame, so that maybe each measure that we're looking at as a potential could have its own designation. And then we might build toward an overview of a designation. I'm just cautious, and I just would like to hear your response to that.
I'm completely in sympathy with the concerns that both you and Senator Rummel have about these designation systems, and I don't think you can entirely get the bugs out of them and make them completely fair to everybody or uncontroversial. But as I say, I'm skeptical that without such a system we can get the emphasis off the AYP system and off the designation of failing schools. I could be wrong about that, but I'm skeptical that we can do it.
Well, you know, generally, I appreciate the that perspective. I'm more concerned about how to actualize it effectively, and I think it's a bit of a minefield.
But I think the process that you have outlined is a good one for getting there. If we want
well,
to go there.
Are there other questions or comments from members at this point? I want to thank you so much. I know Senator Rummel has already mentioned the hard work the whole team has done in this area, but I think you've given us some really strong recommendations to move forward with. We'll respond to your recommendations and hopefully get some expertise in each of these areas. And I think we will consider the possibility of a January public hearing. We haven't gotten to that yet, but once we move forward with these recommendations. And, you know, for those who are listening and maybe you didn't hear your particular measure or area of concern responded to, it's not that we haven't heard and that we're not taking into account much of in addition what was said, in addition to what Dr. Davison has focused on, but we do want to prioritize some particular measures and look at moving forward in the short term with the criteria that were mentioned in the testimony today. And then we'll also take a long-range look, and, you know, we're going to keep some things in our awareness in terms of a long-range timeline for a reporting system. So please continue to give us feedback. We'd love to hear your feedback on the testimony today, and we will be meeting and moving forward on this. So thanks to everyone here today, and have a good week.
Thank you.
End this hearing.